what's going on?
I'm sorry. It's, you know, it's just tough trying to make it in this world. I've been having a hard time. America's a really tough place to live these days.
I mean, you know, there's politics. There's jobs. Jobs are everywhere. Jobs are everywhere, but also somehow nowhere at the same time.
Well, that's sure. That's true. That's not really exactly what I'm talking about, though.
Like housing. You know, it's like to get housing, you have to have a job, but to get a job, you have to have a place to live.
Okay, why are you interrupting me?
Oh, I'm
first
sorry.
Of all,
okay.
And second of all, the problem is that it's like you don't understand. It's like you're not even listening to me. I'm trying to access my files on my phone, but they make the keyboard so damn small nowadays. I can't get on my File Maker Pro. It is ruining my life. Hi, by the way, my name's Baru. I'm here to I'm here to talk about I'm here for some talk therapy.
Yeah, you're here for some kind of therapy. Am I right? You're right though. You're right though. The keyboards. The phones are too damn small. What am I?
The phone's too damn small.
First they got too big, and now they're too small.
The food on the airplanes doesn't even taste good.
The seats on the planes are getting smaller, and there's less of the plane staying on it when it flies.
Oh boy. You know, life is just full of problem Easter. Problem Easter.
Sometimes when life gives you problems, you gotta be the problem. Is the point of the movie that we just went and saw.
You really kind of summed it up.
Yeah.
Actually, unironically.
Yeah. All right. Well, great episode.
All right. Bye, cut it. Print it. We're our job here is done. Yeah. I mean, that's what it meant.
But yeah, we're talking about Problemista, new film. I don't think it's had the full distribution yet. A24 has kind of ignored this movie.
They're kind of teasing it a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, it's really, really, really frustrating it's basically a movie that came out in like the hardest time in history to ever be making a movie, especially if you're like new to making movies at this scale, because it's like you have COVID and then you have this enormous writer's strike that like I think pushed back the like release of the film.
I did see some people who were like who had seen it like months ago, and I was like, how? But like that makes sense if it was the initial like smaller release kind of a situation.
Yeah absolutely. So I don't know, it's trickling, but you know, we wanted to get in here and talk about it just because Julio Torres is like, we've been following Julio Torres's comedy for quite a while now.
Let me be clear. You have been following.
I've
which,
been following.
Which
Julio
isn't
Torres.
A dig against Julio Torres. I will fully admit, I slept on Lost the Spookies.
Ugh, you fucked up.
I fucked up. I've seen them around. I've seen them here and there. I like this stuff. I wanted to watch Lost the Spookies. I'm really bad at watching television shows.
I watch
two episodes and then I'm like, so they're all, so he drives a taxi and they're all animals? Boring. Call me when there's people in this show. But, you know, I have been sleeping on it. I just wanted to be upfront on there because I don't want to falsely claim like, yeah, I was into this guy, you know, before he got big, back when he was on this little show called Saturday Night Live.
back when he did that little indie project, you know. Yeah, Julio had always had a very specific and like very different voice on SNL, which, as we all know, SNL is like a place that kind of catamaries up a bunch of talented comedians and forces them to make the absolute worst material that they will ever make in their career.
It really is where talented comedians, like, go to retire, which is so funny because it used to be, like, where you would go to, like, launch your career. Like, there was that weird, like, dovetailing time. Like, remember, was it Leslie Jones from, like, the Ghostbusters movie? Mm. Is she still on there?
I don't know. No one watches SNL anymore.
Yeah. But, like, she, you know, like, she got off. She was in that time period where it's like, all right, I did my time in the SNL mines. Now I'm off to success.
Yeah.
Nope. Bye. Now it's just, it's like, hey, do you guys like Sarah Squirm? You're going to hate her on our show.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like all of these comedians who otherwise are really good, like Kyle Mooney and Brett Bennett, I think his name. I'm blanking on his name. But, like, these are people who I know they are funny. I know for a fact they are funny. But on the show, they are not funny. And it's a fucking crime. And it's really, really hard to witness.
It's really weird.
It's through no fault of their own.
I was going to say, because, like, ostensibly, they're the ones in the writer's room. But right. There's, like, another secret SNL writer's room where all the ideas are sent to be, like, wrung out of any jokes.
Pretty much. Yeah. Julio Torres is kind of a strange exception because he's had skits on SNL that are actually insanely funny and have become, like, part of our group's vernacular, such as Wells for Boys.
I was going to say, he was the Wells, like, for Wells for Boys guy, right? Oh,
yes, yeah. Julio Torres wrote Wells for Boys, which is a utterly spectacular SNL skit, in my opinion. There was another one too that I'll edit it in. I'll put, like, a little title or screen cap of whatever the other one was. And a clip on TikTok also came into my vision, my view recently. Weirdest way to phrase that possible, but there's an interview with I think Emma Stone and him where they're talking about a skit they were gonna do about an insane woman who has, like, expensive, beautiful silverware, but, like, she can hear the silverware screaming whenever her guests are over and using it to eat. And Julio Torres's direction for her was just like, when you play this character, I want you to do it, like, fully, like, get so into it, like, give me Nicole Kidman in Birth. like that was literally a note that he had. It sounds hilarious. Of course it didn't happen because SNL isn't funny. Because
they were like, hold on here, this sounds a bit too much like a gag.
This sounds like it has too much personality. Yeah. It might actually make somebody laugh somewhere.
While we're on the topic, let me just see what happened on SNL this week. Let me just see.
Yeah, let's figure it out.
Let's see what the last skits that they put up. You know, let's go to where they're putting their best bits. Twitter.com. So last week it was Trump introduces the God Bless the USA Bible. Sounds great.
That sounds really funny and awesome. Is Trump still played by a murderer?
I think so, yeah.
Point being, like, Julio Torres has had, like, a long storied comedian's career, even up to this point. His special My Favorite Shapes is also really, really good.
I was going to say, I've been hearing good about her, about his shapes-based mm-hmm. comedy.
Yeah. Which kind of comes into play in Problemista.
Do you think the prop comic is coming back?
In a manner of speaking. I mean, he's like... I don't know, like...
He's kind of doing a, like... Joel Hodgson's, like, invention of the week thing, mm-hmm. like, from Mystery Science Theater. He's kind of the invention exchange. He's kind of doing that in this movie. And then yeah. I feel like a lot of comedian stuff lately has involved some degree of, like, I made a funny thing for this bit or, like, for this episode. I mean, a lot of Connor O'Malley's bits are kind of a mixture of pratfall and prop comedy.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I think that, like, what Julio Torres does is different, for example, than what Carrot Top does, because, like, when Carrot Top points at a piece of prop comedy, it, like, the thing itself is funny, but Julio Torres will, like, create a context and then, like, pull out a prop that is, like, funny in that context.
Yeah, well, I that's what I say, like, do you think it's kind of coming back, like, an evolution of it, where it's no longer, like, uh-oh, I just pulled out a... It's, we're beyond the King Julius pulls out a giant spoon era. And we're into...
King Bach?
King Bach, thank you.
King Bach or King Batch, I don't remember.
You know who King Julius is that I just realized after I said who? That? That's the fucking lemur from Madagascar.
I was gonna say, I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm
just fucking confused. Okay, I'm so sorry to King Bach.
Don't be sorry to him. He doesn't need... fuck him. Anyway.
But yeah. I don't know. I just feel like there's a bit of a new prop comedy thing. But we're getting a little off from the film. It's just a good movie.
Yeah, it's just a good movie. Well, to kind of recount it vaguely, it's Problemistas, a film about Julio Torres's character Alejandro, who moves from El Salvador to America,
specifically New York City.
New York City and Bushwick.
Yes. Because that's relevant to a lot of the things, like even some of the narrative and themes of the film, that it's specifically he's moved to New York.
Yeah. And he lives in this like insane living situation with these two white roommates who are like, one of them is named Spray. I loved every moment with the roommates. They were the most roommates.
I've really captured it right down to like, oh, this roommate is kind of like annoying. And then like you get a more annoying roommate and you're like, God, I'm so glad this other roommate is here.
Seriously.
I loved their dynamics just so much of just like, you know, it starts with her just like, hey, so like, are you going to come to this? Oh my God, you should come to this party. It's just like being on his ass constantly and then becomes the like roommate who takes aggro for you when the other roommate starts causing problems.
Yeah. Yeah, their dynamics and just like looking at the space that they live in and how like claustrophobically small it is spectacular. And so then he's kind of like, he has to find a job. He's looking around for a job. He kind of produces these ideas as part of his application for Hasbro. That basically one of them is like a Barbie. There's like a Cabbage Patch Kid with like a smartphone or something like that.
The first one later you see is specifically a Barbie with fingers with her fingers crossed behind her back in order to introduce drama into children's play is the argument.
Yeah, which like, this is his usual comedy, so this is kind of like this part of this aspect of the film that he's like a toy maker. It's like, it's definitely loose metafiction auto-bio situation, just because you can, there's a very sincere sense throughout the film that he's like obsessed with design, just the concept of like visual design and like designing things that people interface with in some way, which I think is awesome. I loved all the design in the movie and just like, we'll talk, I'll draw about my feelings about it later, but I think that there's like a very strong artistic sense to the movie overall. But in relation to his application to Hasbro, they basically make him do like a little portfolio piece situation of like ideas and stuff. And he turns it in, and they later on steal his ideas. And guess what, bitch? That shit happens in real life all the time.
Literally constantly. Yeah.
That has happened to people I know. They have had their ideas stolen, and then they were not given a job. No, at the place.
Hey, not only, also, we're gonna let you on a little back, not nothing names, obviously. A little background here. Not only does that happen to, like, people, like, we know, that happens so much more than you probably think it does.
Yeah.
Because, like, what is your fucking recourse if that happens? Especially if you don't have, like, easy verifiable proof that it was yours. Especially because sometimes the only thing you have is, like, wow, they might have seen this and they did make something that's very, very similar to it.
Right.
But I have no way of proving in any way, and I definitely have no money to pursue that.
Yeah. All you can really do is just post about it on fucking X, the Everything app.
Yeah. And maybe if you're lucky, somebody will quote retweet you with a death threat. And you'll get to get a Nazi banned off the website. That's really kind of the only positive outcome.
That's the best you can hope for these days. And then he gets a job at a cryogenic freezing laboratory to kind of basically caretake Tilda Swinton's husband, who is played by RZA.
Such incredible performance, too. Great, great character actor tier performance.
I think there's just a lot of spectacular aspects of the character, Bobby, who RZA plays. Tilda Swinton's husband, who's, like, this artist who's fascinated by eggs, and he creates these, like, egg paintings, and he kind of explains early in the film, like, what they mean to him. I really liked his egg paintings.
I thought they were...
I liked the character's art.
They were, like, the thing that's great about his egg paintings... is that they're obviously kind of inherently funny, because eggs are kind of inherently a funny thing.
Yeah.
But it's, like, played so sincerely that you absolutely could, like, see the, like, a kind of middle brow like art gallery doing these and falling for it, being like, oh, okay, yeah, these are eggs, yeah, no, I really see what you're doing with the eggs.
Yeah, I think that, like, Julio Torres' sensibility kind of, like, hinges on this, like, oh, people are funny because they're strange,
yeah,
but, like, not portrayed in a way that's like, they're weird and I'm normal.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, they're idiosyncratic, and they have interests that they really have to, like, try to get other people to understand.
There's I'm trying to think of, like, the closest comparisons I can think of are things kind of like Harmony Korine, Yorgos Lanthimos, but those are a lot more cynical to exploitative, depending on, you know, who you're talking about. Whereas Julio, all of these characters are weird and idiosyncratic in a way that's funny, but they're also weird and idiosyncratic in a world that, like, makes them complete, like where, like, none of that ever comes off as, like, atypical for them.
Yeah.
Like, I think the thing that works is that, like, it's not just, like, ah, can you believe this kid has these, like, stupid ideas for dolls? Because then what we are shown is that in the world that he inhabits, they're actually great ideas that people love. You know, the eggs aren't just shown as, like, isn't this, like, a stupid idea? Like, people are like, yeah, this is dumb. But then it's like, people... One of the best gags in the film is the woman who comes to their art gallery and is the only one there, just, like, doing the most, like,
God.
These are really beautiful. And then just last second as she's leaving, eat shit with her huge heels. Perfectly timed gag, just like perfectly executed, because you notice immediately, like, oh, she's on, like, stilettos, and it's so, like, here's the person really appraising it, and she's like, yes, this is a good show. And then, like, split second before it cuts away, as she's walking off screen, she just fucking, like, crumbles and eats shit trying to walk in them.
That was so funny.
But yeah, it's like that, where it's like, yeah, people are like dismissive of it. It's like, oh, it's a dumb idea. But then at the same time, it's like, oh, but no, it is like, his work makes sense. Like, you're not shown better art in the film.
Yeah.
Like, everything you're shown is kind of on the same page.
He's working for this company. He accidentally unplugs the freezer with Tilda Swinton's husband in it.
And the RZA freezer. The RZA.
Then, like, plugs it back in, but he still gets in trouble, and he gets fired. But he gets fired while Tilda Swinton's character, Elizabeth, is chewing out his boss. And then, like, on a whim, he just decides to, like, help her out with, like, she's basically getting, like, a downgraded package, so she has to find storage for all the stuff that was stored in the same room, blah, 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 blah.
It should also be noted that it's he doesn't get fired on the first day because she's chewing his boss out, but then after he gets fired, she comes back
yeah
to continue the argument from the day before.
What can we say about Elizabeth?
Without saying too much about my own life, it's like the opposite. It's like not triggering. Right. And it's definitely not nostalgia. But it's the like, wow, this is so accurate. Like, that it becomes really funny. Because it also captures, like, you know, like, the things about those people that can be sweet and why it becomes worth, like, putting in that effort to work with them. And they're, even as they are the most, like, difficult to talk to and work with people possible, but also yeah. If you've ever worked with especially like upper middle class older white people who are also very used to not being taken seriously, everything she does in that film I have witnessed firsthand.
Can I tell my story about meeting Anne Elizabeth?
Yes.
In real life?
Yes.
I was in the Tucson airport in, like, a gift shop. And I guess this was a good day. I was being read correctly as my correct gender. There was this, like, English woman who was abusing the person who worked there at the counter. Just like, oh, I can't believe you can't get this earring. And I just wanted to try on this earring. Oh, you're being so ridiculous. I can't believe you can't do this. And then she, like, saw me and she was like, you, come over here. You help, since you might be able to do it. And I was like, sorry, I can't really help you. I can barely get my own earrings in half the time. And she was like, oh, this is so horrible. Everyone's so rude nowadays. Everyone's so rude. And I looked at her and I gave her my biggest, like, most earnest smile. And I said, yeah, I'm horrible. And then I left. I left her in the dust. Horrible English woman in the Tucson airport in 2021 or whenever that was.
Yeah.
You made my day.
Yes.
Yeah, Tilda Swinton's portrayal of that type of person is just, like, unbelievably good. Every single thing she wears...
Everything she wears, the way she does her makeup and her hair, the physical comedy with her phone.
Yes.
Like, always.
When she's looking through her photos and just, like, randomly zooming in on some of them.
Just like, I can't find it. Hitting them, scrolling rapidly, zooming in and out. Just, like, literally doing things that are like, what are you trying to do? Because you're just doing every action.
That's the thing about this movie, is that it's like, this movie had gags where I was like, in the theater, I was like, oh, that's funny, huh? And then, like, I would think about them later after I left the theater and got home, and I would start laughing my fucking ass off.
Because they're just so accurate. Same things. Like, I've seen people do things where they're like, oh, I'm trying to get to this photo, and they're, like, zooming in on a photo that's currently open, and I'm like, what do you think happens when you keep zooming in? Because it doesn't go to the next photo. You don't go through the photo.
Ugh, it's so fucking good.
The punchline of that scene where she, like, calls Apple support to yell at them for the fact that they won't make, that the that keyboards are too small today, and he just immediately goes, oh, you can enlarge it. And she goes, don't cut me off. And then the next day is like, I'm sending you a voice message since the guy from Apple said you can't enlarge your keyboard. Or no, I'm not allowed to enlarge my keyboard. That's what she said. Like, so, again, not going to get into it, but the amount of times that I've heard sentences like that, and I've been like, I'm going to have to follow up on the, I'm going to have to ask another person's like, so what were they actually told? so that I can fix this.
This brings us to something that I really want to talk about in relation to this movie, which is the form and the style.
Yes.
The movie has kind of a framing device where Julio is a little boy who travels into a cave, and the cave represents America and the unknown, right? So Tilda Swinton is, you know, kind of thematically and metaphorically who he finds in the cave, and she's like alternately represented as herself in this kind of like representative, like dragon-like garment that like has like a train behind it that ends in a tail. Mm-hmm. But then also there's like this kind of like shadow puppetry that shows an actual Hydra. They call her a Hydra because you cut off one of her heads and like two more show up.
Yes.
In terms of like you solve one of her problems and then she has two more problems that she has to scream at you about.
Yes. And it's revealed that that was a nickname that, Bobby had given her when they were together. And that it was, you know, that basically he was one of the few people who could actually, kind of in a little bit of a male manipulator mood, but was one of the few people who like knew how to actually handle her on that by like getting her to be like, hey, like I just solved the problem and you immediately created two separate problems. Like, nah, you're sticking with the solution to the first problem that I just gave you.
Right. Yeah. And like, my point being that, like, I this is what I want to fucking see out of, like, the new queer cinema renaissance, is, like, this level of stylishness, and even, like, non-linearity, just because the movie is, like, flitting back and forth between so many things. But it doesn't, it never gets lost in itself, and you never lose track of, like, the stakes, and what is happening, and, like, the way that it drip feeds and kind of presents the information sequentially is like it makes sense. I was just really stunned and shocked by like the level of visual metaphor and just the level of fun that this movie is.
Yeah, no, it's like you said, it's the queer renaissance thing, and it's a thing that I feel has been kind of missing. No, not yeah. fully missing, because you know we went and saw Conan. There was right. Please Baby Please, which was like not good, but
yeah, playful. Knife Plus Heart.
Yeah, Knife Plus Heart is really good on visually in that. But yeah, there's a kind of like playfulness that I associate with like older queer cinema that I haven't really seen as much. And this film, well, you know, it's an A24 piece. It's very accessible, still nails it. It still has that playfulness to it. And I think part of it is that framing device is there because this is ostensibly being presented as if it's like a fairy tale.
Uh-huh.
And I think what I like with regards to that, and this also ties to the queer elements of it, is that it's sincere, but in a way that makes it look cynical.
Yes.
So it's playful in a way that makes it feel like it's not taking itself seriously, but it actually gives all of the major characters and even a couple of, like the minor characters like full narrative arcs. Like they have complex dynamics with each other. They have even a character who spends most of the film frozen has like a character arc. Like,
yeah.
The characters are treated like respectfully. And it has this sort of like playful dark comedy to it, and this like almost cynical kind of like moral, where like Tilda Swinton's character gives Alejandro the advice of like, find someone's name and make yourself a problem for them. That's how you get things done in America. Which is, yeah. That's her being like a Karen and whatever. But it's also like she's correct that the biggest thing that makes the American Empire tick is faceless bureaucracy. The biggest thing that corporations lean on is faceless bureaucracy, where you're going to be aimed at the kind of like first line of defense, the fucking customer service guy. And what you actually need to do is find the guy who fires the guy who fires those guys.
Right.
And make yourself a problem for them.
Yep.
Because those guys will do anything to avoid being inconvenienced. So it's almost like a really cynical thing where it's like, the true message is to achieve your dreams is be an asshole. Find the right person you gotta be an asshole to, and you'll get what you want.
It's very New York messaging.
Yeah. But it's also like super sincere because it's like putting that in the context of like the vast unfair system you're in.
Right. It's such a Matryoshka doll of a film where it's just like layers of irony and then a core of sincerity.
Yeah, exactly. It hides its sincerity underneath what seems to be frivolousness and like irreverence. There we go.
Irreverence.
I was like, it's the word that the New Yorker used to love to call comedies in the 2000s.
Oh, yes.
With
yes,
its irreverent wit. Yeah, irreverence. But then it's like, it reveals that it's like, no, actually, like, everything's being taken, like, seriously. Like this is just the way you have to deal with all of this bullshit is kind of be funny about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a lesson that I've kind of heard before, but I didn't really listen to it until I watched this movie, which is, you know, a strange thing to admit. But, like, it really, like, I don't know, like, through a confluence of factors, like, it can be so easy to want to self-minimize. And, like, I'm just not the girl that's going to get a refund on things. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not the girl that's going to be like, oh, they forgot this. I better call them. And they forgot part of my order. Hello. But, like, I don't know, you kind of got to stand up for yourself at some point.
It really is, like, the thing that the movie is doing is that it has the characters as kind of opposite end extremes of it, and the film's message is, like, the actual real message of that is obviously that, like, you got to kind of find the compromise of the two. Because part of her character's whole thing, like, arc is that, like, you know, she, because of how deferent he is, that is why, like, he's able to get her to where she needs to go. But part of that is kind of just, like, the fact that eventually he's just willing to be like, okay, yeah, I did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, because it's when she turns on him that, like, she is suddenly, like, at her most vulnerable. And it's when he finally is like, okay, we're going to do this because otherwise it's just not going to happen, that she's like, okay, you're right. And it's like he represents the furthest end of just, you know, deference, always making yourself small, always trying to make things work and going, but that's not fair. Or like, but it's okay. But like, it's fine. Like, what's the big deal? And she's on the other end where it's like, everything is a big deal. Always send it back.
Absolutely. Yeah, so Alejandro and Elizabeth, their main A-plot is, like, trying to set up this art exhibition for Bobby's 13 egg paintings, which goes in, you know, all different directions. It eventually involves, like, Elizabeth taking on, like, a second, like, gay guy assistant who is kind of, like, loosely in competition with Alejandro. Who also has his own, like, funny arc, hilariously. Like, he doesn't have that many lines, but you, like, see his arc where he's, like, at first he's, like, way more competent and he's, like, kind of stands up to her more, but then he gets, like, whittled down.
I also just love that the whole gag of his character is that he's a threat to Alejandro while also being very explicitly like, I don't want this job. Like, I am being forced to take this job because I got a DUI.
Ugh. God. Yeah. So
the punchline with his arc of like her being like, oh, he works down at the docks servicing fishermen, and then the narrator's been like, he got a job being sexy. He literally got a job where they're paying him to study how sexy he is.
Oh no, it was like he got a Guggenheim grant for being cute.
That was it. Yeah, he got a Guggenheim grant for being cute.
Exploring cuteness in the arts, like. Isabel, we have to take a moment just to shout out Isabella Rossellini, who's been showing up a lot lately as like a kind of like narrator figure. She was also in, she was also the best part of Cat Person.
Oh yeah.
So I just hope that gay people pay Isabella Rossellini's paychecks for the rest of her life. Kind of similarly to Catalina Saavedra, who we also saw in weird level of overlap between this movie and Rotting in the Sun, where Catalina Saavedra, who played like basically the main character in Rotting in the Sun, plays Alejandro's mother in this movie.
Oh, you're right. I didn't even recognize her. She's playing such like, I think I didn't recognize her because she's playing such different like roles.
Because she's not freaking the fuck
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because she's not the one who's super meek and anxious and having a mental breakdown this time. She's just like a kind of confident, cool art mom.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I had the same kind of thing where I was like, that looks just like her, but she looks like way more put together here. Because she didn't just kill somebody.
Yeah, the magic of cinema.
I think I think the lady who walks out of the gallery and trips on her high heels, I think that's Martin Gutierrez, who
really played, hold on,
who played the hilarious artist in Rotting in the Sun as well.
Yes.
So go watch our Rotting in the Sun video if you want to know about that.
Yeah. Spoiler, as Bruges is spoiled, someone dies in it. But we're not telling who.
We're not gonna tell you who dies. La 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 la. So yeah, that's kind of the A plot, is that they're trying to get this like exhibition off the ground. The B plot is that like, well, I mean, I don't know. The two competing A plots is that like, Alejandro's trying to secure citizenship, and the movie describes the process of securing citizenship, which I have heard secondhand from very many friends who've had to immigrate here. Uh-huh. It's a fucking goddamn fucking nightmare.
Oh, it is. It's I, having known two people who've immigrated here via marriage, exact same levels of contradictions of just like,
yeah,
of like, oh, well, yeah, welcome to America. You're not allowed to use any services, but also you're not allowed to work for money.
Yeah, you're not allowed to make money, but you do need to have money in order to pay these fees. Like, I'm somebody who, like, I have already failed several of the tests of society. I am never going to know how to drive or have a license. And I'm never going to pay a mortgage in my life. I'm going to die renting. I would never make it. I just wouldn't. I wouldn't make it in this situation.
And a lot of people don't. That's
a lot of people don't.
The film kind of explicitly depicts that. Like, yeah, a lot of people just don't make it. You can do everything, yep, right? Your job decides that they don't need you anymore.
Yep. Yep. Then you disappear into the ether like that guy in that one vine or whatever.
Speaking of, there's that's a reason why there's a lot of green card work visas in the tech industry, is because, as it turns out, being able to hold above someone's head 30 days to vacate the country, really good incentive to get what you want out of somebody.
Yeah, pretty fucking depressing.
But you know what's not depressing?
What?
This movie's rambunctious sense of humor.
Yeah, it presents it all very colorfully and very whimsically, even though the real life consequences are kind of sickening to think about. And point being, so he has to take jobs where he accepts cash. So he goes on Craigslist, which is represented by Larry Owens playing the hammiest, most, like, special effects-laden, like, character. I loved the Craigslist stuff.
When that bit started, I was, like, so lost for a second. I was like, what is this? I was like, what's happening? And then I realized, oh, he's going to be going to Craigslist a lot during this film. So they need a more visually engaging way to represent that experience. So it's Owens as this, like, monstrous, detritus-filled, like monstrosity that is whispering and chanting, like, job listings.
I loved it.
It's great. It's great. I think it's a really smart way to be like, okay, my character is going to, you know, to depict this thing, a huge part of the process is just spending a ton of time looking at Craigslist. How do I make that? What is the visual representation of how that feels? Which is approaching some sort of demonic god.
It's like, that's the kind of thing that I like, which where it's like, it's such a show don't tell impulse to do that. You know, to kind of have Craigslist be this, like, fucked up, like, scary dimension that you have to go to when you need money. He does a bunch of odd jobs here. One of them is he does, like, sexual cleaning for
this guy. Well, that's specifically the last one after he gets fucked over by every other Craigslist job. And Bank of America, leading to what is undoubtedly going to be the most quoted scene of the film. I stand with Bank of America.
I stand with the Bank of America. The other line that keeps popping up in my head is like, he takes basically like an Avon lady job at a certain point, and he has to like walk up to people in the street and try to like talk to them about their hair.
Which, sidebar, another great thing about the physical acting in the film, his gay little insecure walk.
He does this, he has this physicality throughout the movie that's like where he's like, he has the walking version of a speech impediment, if that makes sense.
Yes.
You know how every gay kid went to speech class?
Yes. He has the walking version of that. No, I agree.
He would be put in walking class.
I was about to say he walks in a way that is very clearly exerting so much more effort to walk forward than he is actually being propelled forward, which is just great character walk, great character acting for his plot and his arc.
Yeah, it's really spectacular.
Because it's like he goes all the way up and all the way down, but moves forward like half a step each time.
Yeah, so he's, like, trying to get people's attention, and he's, like, failing. And then he goes up to his boss or whatever, and he's like, you said this was up to $200 an hour. Which, ladies and gents out there, you gotta keep your eye out. If it says up to,
that means you ain't making it. That means you're making less than minimum wage.
And the guy is just like, well, you're not trying hard enough. Watch this. And he stands up, and he very heterosexually, walks up to these two women, and he's like, that's a cool jacket. Is that yellow?
That the line he uses to open, which I like, is that they don't even show him making the sale.
That line to me weirdly represents so much, because, like, so much of what's hard about talking to other human beings is, like, people... I don't want to say people are fucking stupid or whatever. Like, everyone's stupid but me, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's an extremely annoying complex to have.
Yeah.
Sometimes you kind of just have to say the stupidest fucking thing when you first meet someone or are trying to, like, talk to somebody. Like the girl at my high school who came up to me when I had a Jamba Juice and she wanted a bite of my Jamba Juice. I didn't know her that well, but, you know, she was being nice and she came up to me and she said, hey, you ever notice how it's, like, blazing hot as the Dickens in the summer and, like, freaking cold in the winter? And she got that bite of Jamba Juice from me.
And she was right.
She said some shit. It was the stupidest shit I ever heard. But, you know, she shot her shot. And that makes her probably a more functional person in her life than I am.
Back in like 2011, the solution we used was Awkward Turtle.
That's true. I threw down my Jamba Juice and I did the Awkward Turtle hand gesture.
That was how we initiated conversation back then. That's the real cause of the loneliness epidemic. No one Awkward Turtles anymore.
We gotta bring back Awkward Turtle.
You approach someone, you say something, and they just whip out the camera phone and start recording you.
Have you seen that TikTok of the Chick-fil-A cashier?
No.
I'll try to find it and send it to you. It's like it's a whole thing. Someone recorded their Chick-fil-A cashier experience, and it was like somebody, I don't know, I can't even describe it to you, honestly.
I was just thinking the other day about, do you remember Alex from Target?
Yes.
That kid got a New York Times profile.
Dude, where is he now? Probably dead.
Honestly, probably dead. I think I when I searched it up, I saw a post that I did not click on from LinkedIn.com that said, where is Alex from Target now in 2024? And I said, he doesn't need that. He doesn't need LinkedIn.com telling me where he is.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. He needs
Christ.
Justice. Is what he fucking needs.
Justice and privacy. For once in his goddamn life. So fucking weird. Weird circumstances. But anyway.
But yeah, no, I know what you mean. It's so much of. That's the thing about the film. It's like everyone. I don't think there is a normal person in this movie. I don't think there is a single person who never says something weird.
That's true.
I guess. And that's guess how I like it. Kind of the woman that Bobby cheats on Tilda Swinton's character with. I don't think she says anything weird.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think she says at least like one thing.
She has to say something that's silly. But she's more normal. But I think it's because she's supposed to be positioned in this like weird obstacle way where you can kind of understand her character.
Yeah,
I do love the gag that you assume that she's a mom with a bunch of kids, and so it's like, oh, her art career didn't pan out, like, because she's like, now she's a mom with all these kids, and then like the punchline is like, did you see all those kids, all from different fathers, you can tell, and Julio just goes, she runs a daycare.
Like, also I just want to say, like, that scene is just so fucking good. Like, all the stuff with Dahlia is so fucking good. A, because Greta Lee's great. B, you know, you're just like waiting for the shoe to drop on that second shot that ties it all together and shows that Elizabeth did not write that apology. Yeah. And you get it, and it's like the best version of the scene that there could be. It's like 5 seconds, it's quick, it's, you know, it's like, it's just a perfect, like, elbowing you in the ribs kind of joke.
I think what I like about it is that it's like, it's not just like that, oh, she didn't write it or she didn't mean it. It's specifically the fact that it's like, she's like, well, can I at least read it? And he's like, God, no. It's just like, if you read it, it's not gonna work.
Then you're gonna, because like, they would be editing it forever.
Yes.
Forever.
She'd be like, oh, I'm not going to say that. And he's like, you're not saying it.
Well, you didn't say it in the first place, bitch.
I think that's one of the first things in the film that you see him, like, the way in which their dynamic works, because he knows how to kind of, like, push back on her and this sort of, like, oh, I don't like direct confrontation, so I'm going to indirectly resolve this way.
Well, after Julio takes the sex cleaning job, which during that scene he sprays Windex over his open glass of alcohol, which gave me anxiety. But anyway, they sell off Bobby's paintings successfully, and then Elizabeth, like, while he's out doing some other shit, Elizabeth leaves him a voice message about how she's made plans to cryogenically freeze herself, and she's basically like drank the poison, the cherry poison that like shuts down her body.
It's so funny because it's a moment that almost like makes it appear as if she is in fact just like as shitty as like the worst assumptions are, and she kind of is. Yeah. But also it makes it clear that she's a little bit like naive. Like her assumption is that like, yeah, I signed the form. That will be good, right? Like just like no awareness of the fact that like, no, that's not how that works.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, that part of the movie actually freaked me out, where it was just like, damn, she didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
She just
Yeah, she didn't. But like he knows that. Like he knows that she doesn't really give a shit, ultimately.
Yeah, he kind of has to like manipulate her. But, you know, it's a little bit of a victimless crime.
Yeah. No, they're mutual manipulations.
After that, like Alejandro basically stands up for himself and corners the Hasbro guy at the office.
That is where she, and that's also where she pulls through, where she's like, oh, also I spent all day the other day on the phone with Hasbro and found the name of the person who runs that. Here's their name. Go get the job. Like basically saying like, I know that like you're going, that like this is what you want, and I know that you're not going to do it without me telling you.
Yeah. It's really, really good. That she's like, she fucks up, but she at least does, you know, she opens the door for him, more or less. And yeah, he basically like blackmails them into giving him a job and sponsoring his visa, which is great. Happy ending.
Yeah, no, and he was correct to do so.
And he was valid and correct to do so. And then kind of, you know, they transport 300 years in the future or however long, where like Bobby and Elizabeth are thawed out and Elizabeth immediately starts complaining.
The payoff of the fact that like, oh, also this like technology that is first introduced is like probably mostly a scam. actually it does work. Actually they figured it out.
They did it. Those mad people, those crazy fuckers,
the absolute mad lads, they figured it out.
Yeah, because at the beginning of the movie all of their infomercials are like, it's basically death.
Yeah, all of their infomercials are like, legally we have to call it euthanasia, but we're not killing you.
Really, really good. And then we see an old man on a cane who's like smiling at Elizabeth. And of course that old man turns out to be Alejandro, who lived a long, plentiful, full, beautiful life.
Also has a great gag of people being like, oh my god, that's the famous toy designer. Like the idea that people are just like, oh my god, in the future we all know this guy.
Yeah. And like the movie then like has all of these kind of like, as it's wrapping up, it has all these shots of these like very, very designed installation pieces set in the middle of like shots from previously in the film.
Oh yeah, with the mom explaining that she figured out what she wanted her piece to be.
Yes, yeah.
So the setup is when they're starting the film and they're introducing this thing, is that she's a sculpture artist, and then as he's growing up, he basically would doodle these like designs for like, oh, I want this huge palace to live in, and she would make them for him in her yard, and she always just wanted to provide for him no matter what.
Yeah.
And then that's why she's struggling with what to make, is because I assume that it's because like she uses him as her inspiration a lot. And so at the end of the film, I'll make this thing from this thing that I previously made for you. And so I took it as like, yeah, the metaphor is that it's these represent the ways in which like every person you meet can be seen as an obstacle or as part of a puzzle.
What a beautiful little mama's boy movie.
Right.
I just love
Well, that it is a so gay much. It is a movie about a gay boy. Yeah. Isn't it about a gay boy who becomes obsessed with a rich, eccentric white woman who causes more problems than she solves?
God. I mean, yeah, you gotta love, like, the gay impulse that I feel as well frequently to just, like, deify insane women. It makes so much sense.
We all need our Shanley.
Because and like he just effortlessly illustrates it that like there is value to Elizabeth as a person. Like she has inherent value because of the way that she navigates through the world. Like she puts everybody through insane fucking grief, and she's often like a highly abusive, broken person. But
she is also still a person.
What did you say?
I said, but she is also still a person, despite everything.
Despite everything, she's still a human being. And functionally a widow. I mean, you know, and any number of kind of, like, traumas.
Very sweet, great, thoughtful film. Also, probably one of the few films I can think of that I've seen that actually made me laugh in a theater.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually funny. Who knew?
Like, and it's not just funny. It's like whimsical comedy funny, which normally nowadays is fucking poison.
So here at Film Critters, we do a little thing called Better Than Worse Than, where you know to chart things on a graph chart,
but also to make recommendations,
and also to make recommendations
related subjects, related films. Film is.
Yeah. So to start off, Jay, what film is this movie better than?
Everywhere, All, etc.
God damn it, you fucking took mine.
Is that what yours is gonna be?
We can have the same one. We can have the same one.
Alright, well let's both talk about it. Yeah. A big A24 film, also about immigration, also about the place of a marginalized immigrant queer person within a Western capitalist society. Yes. Silly, really great visual design and stuff. This one blows that one out the fucking water.
Yeah, I would say
even handles mommy issues better.
from the standpoint of like the Craigslist scenes, like a vaguely similar, like very colorful style.
Yes. I think though what this tells me is that this has a better style because it feels less downriver of like superhero movie stuff, which is a problem that I have with Everywhere and Everything.
Right.
Everywhere Everything All at Once was one of those films where I walked out being like, yeah, that was pretty good. That was pretty decent. And then just as time went on and I thought about it more, I was just like, I don't think I ever feel any real desire to watch that again.
No, me neither.
Whereas Problem Easta, I could see in like a year or two being like, oh my god, you haven't seen this, it's really funny, I'll put it on.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I don't know. I tried to get my mom to watch Everything Everywhere All at Once and she turned it off because she got bored. Which is like...
There's great performances still in it. I still... What's the daughter's name? What's the daughter... Who plays the daughter in that one again? Stephanie Hsu. I did not get the thing. People kept being like, oh my god, I can't believe they snubbed her for the Oscar for Jamie Lee Curtis. One, I do agree. They only gave the Oscar to Jamie Lee Curtis as a like lifetime achievement award, as a like, oops, we never gave you one. Sorry. Yeah. I didn't think she was that good. I think people were just confusing the fact that they liked her character with that it was a good performance.
Yeah, the only really memorably good performances in Everything Everywhere All at Once for me were Michelle Yeoh and Ke Huy Quan.
Yes, like, no, exactly. Like the two leads are phenomenal in that film. They both do great. Everyone else is kind of on, you know, default mode.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I don't know. Everything Everywhere, it just doesn't like fully pull itself together for me. Like, it's perfectly entertaining, but it's just doing a little bit too much. And also, it's like, if you're gonna, like, wear the clothes of an action movie, I think that your action scenes should be a little bit better choreographed. Like, yeah. I didn't think they were that well choreographed or shot. And also, like, you've brought this up specifically, that it's like, haha, dildo joke, funny.
Yeah, like, which is really weird in a movie. I will admit, a big thing I liked about it is that I liked having a villain who's like primary motivation is just the angst of being a fat dyke.
Right.
Like, I like that. I like that, but I kind of, in retrospect, I'm just like, but I can get that out of, like, a lot of better movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really about that. It's really more about the mom's anxieties, which are, like, you know, it's fine. It's an okay movie, but it's no problemista.
It's no problemista. Well, what movie is this, is problemista worse than?
So this was really hard for me to think about.
It was hard for me too.
Not even because I necessarily am like, problemista is best of the best. I do think so far problemista might be one of the best films I've seen this year of new release, of like releases this year.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of go back to other ones, and I gotta say, I'm putting Baccarat above this one.
Oh, same. Yeah, same.
Baccarat is just it. If you're looking for outside the U.S. perspectives on the U.S. from, like, especially if, like, a nice queer cast, Baccarat is not a comedy, but it is so fucking good. And kind of similarly, where problemista plays within the, like, Western fairy tale, New York, da 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 da, like, problemista's playing within that kind of, like, genre. Baccarat is playing within the Western, and I feel like it does a lot more with the genre it's taking on. Whereas problemista is kind of more like, problemista is to its genre is what, like, The Simpsons is to sitcoms.
Yeah. Yeah, problemista looks at the problem of, like, American bureaucracy and the way that it, like, crushes black and brown people, and it kind of shrugs and it goes, yeah, it is what it is, we have to live here, which is, like, obviously a very New York response to that whole concept and predicament. That's not how I want to feel. I want to feel angry because I am angry.
Yeah.
About how much this country sucks. And Baccarat is like a very properly angry film that kind of doesn't, it's not that Baccarat is specifically looking at America. It's more just like this, the American export of like white supremacist colonialism.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, both films say we can do it. We can navigate these systems and get past them.
Mm-hmm.
And Baccarat says that with a decapitated head.
Yeah.
And problemista says that with an internship.
Yeah. Baccarat has a more sort of Swiss cheese those motherfuckers kind of approach.
Yeah. Which is, and to be fair to Julio Torres, he is coming from a perspective of being within the United States. That is going to give you a completely different relationship than a Brazilian filmmaker.
Yeah, definitely. I thought that this movie didn't quite stand up to Past Lives, which is another new film.
I've been meaning to watch that. Yeah,
you should watch it. It might be a decent one to talk about.
Okay.
I really like Past Lives. I think that Greta Lee is awesome in it. And she, like, kind of the same thing as, like, she has a similar situation to Catalina Saavedra in both Rotting in the Sun and Problemista, where you don't really recognize that it's the same person because, like, they're so in their character.
Who's this? Which actress did you say it was?
Greta Lee.
Oh, yes. Oh, she was in this. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like she just looks like a different person, not because she looks different, but just because like she's embodying a completely different type of character. She's been in a lot of stuff that I've seen. I wish I could remember some more specific examples. Oh, Russian Doll. She looks totally different in Russian Doll too.
She's in the show Russian Doll?
Yeah, she's her friend Maxine.
You're right. I was like, I haven't seen it in a while. Maybe that's why. But then no, you said that. I was like, oh wait, no, I know exactly who you were talking about. Whoa. That's crazy.
Yeah, Greta Lee's incredible. Past Lives is a film by Celine Song about kind of like a Korean immigrant to America reconciling like a past, like a long lost love, and kind of experiencing that love in conjunction with like this new relationship with like a white American boy. And it's extremely like flowy and like flowery and emotional and artful, and it did make me cry. I think that it's like the only thing I can say that about Problemista that like isn't even a dig or an insult about it, like it's totally fine, but like the, you know, kind of this the same way that like we prefer Baccarat to this film, I prefer Past Lives to Problemista, because like it has a similarly humanistic lens, but it's not like a not to say that Problemista feels minimizing, but it's a little minimizing by virtue of the tone.
Yeah.
And Past Lives is a lot more contemplative, I think.
Yeah. And when we say all this, remember, we're not saying this is necessarily fully a dig. This is the sort of recommendation kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's tough because, like, you know, between the two, I pick Past Lives basically by a hair. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I will say, if we're comparing something more directly, I think one I might toss in as better than that is also a comedy immigration film.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta give it up for Coming to America.
Yeah, that's fucking true.
I thought about it. It was the first one I thought about, but I was like, that's so unfair though, because Coming to America is a perfect comedy.
you really can't, like, there's nothing else that compares. Like, it has just such a prolific, you know, Eddie Murphy be damned, Coming to America has an extremely prolific position, and it's a hard one to beat. Those are our little better than worse than recommendations. Don't take them too seriously. You know, we're just trying to recommend some other films for you here. But yeah, that, I think that about rounds out Problemista. It's a great, great movie. Highly recommend. Very funny. And a lot of great talent behind it. Well, I really only have cash right now. I can't really
Oh, just Venmo me. There's a QR code.
Oh, okay.
You know what a QR code is, right?
You just use your phone.
You just open your phone.
Open
your phone and go to the camera.
Open my phone, just open the phone and go to my contacts and
that's
go
the
to
flashlight. Go to the, you just turn go, the flashlight.
Open
on.
Oh, open like my phone apps to make like a phone call.
Faint screen, push the big button on the center.
And then
just go to the camera.
And then I go to
what is that? Is that an iPhone 7?
Stop yelling at me! Stop yelling at me!